Shall we turn in our Bibles to the 29th chapter of the book of Genesis? Jacob has been guilty of a very common mistake that we often make, and that is trying to help God out. Believing in the purposes of God, knowing that God is desiring to accomplish certain things, we somehow develop a kind of a complex that God cannot do his work unless I get in and help him out. Or surely the work of God is going to fail unless I step in and take charge. It was God's will that Jacob receive the blessing of Esau. Before he was ever born, when his mother was praying about the problemed pregnancy, God told her that there were two nations in her womb that were diverse from each other, and that the elder would serve the younger. Now, Esau was seeking to reverse that. He was planning to give the blessing to Esau. Isaac was planning to give the blessing to Esau, reversing what God had declared. And Rebekah, knowing that Isaac was planning to bless Esau, and in the blessing he thought he was giving to Esau, he made his brothers his servants. But Rebekah had Jacob disguise himself as his brother, take in goat meat that she had prepared so that it would taste like venison, and with the guise of being his elder brother, Jacob deceived his father, claimed to be his older brother, gave him the goat meat that his mother had prepared to taste like the venison, the barbecue venison that he liked. And Esau ate of the venison, Isaac ate of the venison and blessed Jacob with the blessing he had intended to bless Esau. No sooner had Jacob departed than Esau came in with the venison that his father had asked, and Isaac then trembling realized that his plans to cross the plan of God have been thwarted. Esau wept for the loss of the blessing, asking of his father if there wasn't something left that he could give to him. And then Esau comforted himself with the thought that my dad is old, he's going to die pretty soon, and as soon as he dies, I'm going to kill Jacob. Evidently, he had voiced his intentions to some of the servants who told Rebekah. And Rebekah called Jacob and said, I want you to go to my brother's house in Haran and stay there until I notify you, because your brother's intending to kill you. And so Jacob fled from that place near Beersheba, 500 miles to the area of Babylon, to Haran. And in chapter 29... we find him now coming to the conclusion of this 500-mile journey, arriving at Haran. So Jacob went on his journey, and he came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and he saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was over the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, and water the sheep and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, we are from Haran. Then he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? They said, we know him. And he said to them, is he well? They said, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. Then he said, look, it's still high day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go feed them. Evidently, Jacob was wanting to get rid of these little guys with their sheep so that when Rachel arrived, he would be alone with her. Interesting again how that God led him to the well, even as the servant earlier, Eliezer, had been led by the Lord and had come to the place where Rebekah was coming out to water, or to get water. And so Jacob now, coming to the well, it was an interesting type of well, not the usual type where you're dipping the buckets in, but a well that was closed by a rock and then would roll back the rock and let the water out. Probably it took a while for the water to build up inside so that when they roll it back, you get a good flow of water out and they'd water the sheep. The stone evidently was too heavy for the little boys who were watering the sheep to move it by themselves. And so they'd wait till a whole group would arrive, and then one who was stronger would roll the stone back. They'd water their sheep and they would leave. These little fellows were gathering early, and it could be that they would water them in the order in which they arrived. In other words, the first to arrive with their sheep would be first in line, so that when the rock was removed, they would be the first ones to get the water. And so you'd line up, and thus the desire to get there early. And so it was just about noon, high day. And these fellows were already lining up. They should still be out in the fields. They should have their sheep out still pasturing, but they wanted to get in line and get early in line, so they'd be at the front of the line. And so they're there waiting for that time of the evening when they'd roll back the stone and they could water their sheep. And so they're not that communicative. Jacob comes up and says, hi, fellas, do you know Laban, son of Nahor? Yeah, we know him. Well, is he well? Yeah, he's well. Hey, there comes his daughter right now with her sheep. So Rachel was a shepherdess, not at all unusual. If you go over to the land today and you observe the Bedouins, quite often the little girls are out tending the sheep. And whenever we go past a flock of sheep and a little girl tending them, our guide will usually say, now there's Rachel tending her sheep. And it gives you the idea and the concept that of what did exist in that culture. And so Rachel was on her way, and he probably wanted to get rid of these little guys at this point. So he said, why don't you go out and feed them? They said, we cannot until all of the flocks have gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. Now, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So it was probably a little bit of, you know, macho show-off here. It usually took several guys to roll back the stone, but he sees Rachel and her flock of sheep, so he goes up and he muscles the thing back so that Rachel can water her flock. And then he kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice, and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son, So she ran and told her father. Now, I don't know if it happened in that order. If he kissed her first and wept and then told her who he was, or if he told her who he was and then kissed her and wept. But I'm sure that Rachel was probably taken back, at least by the whole scene. She no doubt had heard the story of her Aunt Rebecca, who was taken by the servant of Abraham to be the wife of Abraham's son. And how that the story involved the well, and how that Rebecca had been prosperous as the wife of Esau. So there was already some romantic connotations in regards to the family of Nahor and the family of Abraham, and they centered around the well. And so here is a relative now of hers. Actually, he is a cousin to her, and he kisses her. He cries with no doubt a cry of just thanksgiving, just overcome with emotion. God has been faithful. God has brought him to the family. And not only that, it says of Rachel a little later on, she was of beautiful form and features. So she was a beautiful gal. And he is overcome with emotion and tells her who he is. I am Rebekah's son, your brother's sister. So it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him, which is the typical type of Oriental greeting in that area of the country, the hugging, the kissing on each cheek and all. And he brought him to the house, and Jacob told Laban all of these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now, evidently, during the month that he was there, he had pitched in and helped with the duties, helped with the chores. He was a very industrious person. And so Laban said, "Look, you're a relative, but because of that, you know, you shouldn't serve me for nothing. I ought to be paying you wages. What wages do you want?" So Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were delicate. That word means, or weak. Some believe that it means that they were blue, and that blue eyes were a sign of weakness, whereas Rachel's were the deep brown, which was more natural among that ethnic group. Whether or not that is so, we are not sure. There are some who indicate that she had eye problems. Her eyes are weak, that would be eye problems. So people can make all kinds of things, you know, out of a passage of Scripture, which really are immaterial to the understanding of the total story. Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance, good looking. Now Jacob loved Rachel. It must have been pretty much love at first sight. He's only been there a month. But he's already in love with Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." Hey, good deal. Laban probably would have given him the daughter to marry, but 7 years of labor out of this fellow for the, all right. And so Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So the deal was made. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And this is a beautiful and touching part. They seemed but a few days to him because of the love that he had for her. And that is a very beautiful and touching passage of Scripture. Now, I hate to take away from the romance of the whole story. Sort of a dirty trick. But Jacob was a little over 70 years old at this point. Oh. Hey. Don't knock it. You see, he lived to be over 165. So he's still a kid. You know, he hasn't even reached the halfway mark yet. And so considering the virility and all, and the longevity, it isn't that old in those days. And so he wasn't too old to be romantic. And the love that he had for her, so great. 7 years just seemed like a few days. And I like that. I think that's very touching. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in to her. So Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening, after it was dark, that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, he looked across in the bed, and it was Leah. And he scrambled out and got hold of Laban and said, what have you done to me? I serve you for Rachel. Why have you deceived me? Interesting, isn't it? He was there running from the anger of his brother Esau because he had been guilty of deceiving his father. Now he himself is being deceived by his father-in-law. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Adonai Bezek, when he was captured, they cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And he said, there have been 70 kings who ate meat at my table, whose thumbs and big toes I have cut off. As I have done, so it has been done to me. A law of life, a law that God has established within nature. Whatever a man sows, that he also reaps. It is a necessary law in order to keep order in nature. Life would be almost impossible, chaotic at the least, if this were not a law of nature. If you did not reap what you sowed, then the whole agricultural industry would be chaotic. As you go out and plant your beans and you raise carrots. So the law of sowing and reaping is not just valid in the physical universe. The Bible declares it's also valid in the spiritual realm. Whatever a man sows, that he reaps. If you sow to your flesh you're going to reap. If you sow to your spirit, of your spirit you're going to reap. Watch what you sow into your mind. Watch what you plant, because you become what you have planted in your mind. Jacob had deceived. Now he is being deceived. So Laban said, "It must not be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfiller week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years." Oh, rip off. Laban is a crook. In fact, when he and Jacob in the next chapter have their showdown, Jacob accuses him of changing his wages 10 different times. So this isn't the only incident. Not the rest of them aren't recorded, but 10 different times Laban changed the wages of Jacob. But you know what? Jacob always got the better of him. Laban is a despicable kind of a person. And really, the only pleasant part of the story is that Jacob, who wasn't much better, was able to get the best of him on every turn. Now, it was the custom at that time to, when you got married, to spend the first week with your wife. So fulfill her week, and then we will also give you the other one also for the service by which you will serve me for another 7 years. Then Jacob did so, and he fulfilled her week, so he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to the daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went in to Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. Now, here is the case, of course, of polygamy. And there could be advantages to polygamy. I was in a sociology class in Orange Coast College several years ago, and the professor asked the class if anyone could see any advantage to polygamy. I was probably the oldest student in the class, and I think probably the only one that was married. Most of them were just young college students. And so none of them could see any advantage of polygamy, and I spoke up and I said, "Well, I can see, if you just want advantages, I can see where there could be advantages to polygamy. I mean, you could have one who was a gourmet cook, keep her in the kitchen. Two or three that were executive-type secretaries, send them to work so you'd, have the payroll coming in. And then you could have one that's just extremely beautiful to lounge around with all day while the others bring in the work and the one brings in your treats, I mean, I can see that you could have advantages to having many wives. But, I said, I can also see disadvantages. And I think that the disadvantages would outweigh the advantages. I mean, to keep one woman happy is more than a man can do. And I can imagine what would happen if you tried to keep several women happy. It wasn't all pleasant. What you would imagine might happen did indeed happen. Sort of a rivalry and a jealousy among the wives. And as Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. So no man can serve two wives. And he had a partiality for the one. But because he was partial to the beautiful one and sort of negligent towards the uglier one, God had mercy on the uglier one, and she became very prolific as far as bearing children. But there was always sort of that longing for her husband's love that was never fully given to her. But then the other one, not being able to have children, became envious and became sort of a witch. So it became a very trying kind of a circumstance, as we will see as we go on in the story. Now, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and that's a terrible position for a woman to be in, married to a man, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, "The Lord has surely looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me." And that's pathetic. It's sad. "I've borne him a son. Surely now he will love me." She called his name Reuben, which means "look, a son," because she said, "The Lord has looked upon my affliction." So she named him "look, a son," hoping that the birth of this son would bring to her her husband's love. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also." And she called his name Simeon, which means "hearing." So God has seen the first son, "look." The second son, "God has heard my cry." And so she called him "hearing." God sees, God hears. And so the first two sons, named after the distress of her own heart for the lack of love that she is receiving from her husband. God sees me. God's heard me. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me. Surely, you know, he'll start living with me now, or he'll become attached or joined to me." So she called him Levi, which means "joined." Again, expressing that yearning for the love of her husband. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now I will praise the Lord." Therefore, she called his name Praise, Judah. Then she stopped bearing. So in rapid succession, probably in a 4-year period of time, she bore him 4 sons, while Rachel remains barren. Now, in that culture, the greatest thing that a woman can do is bear a son for her husband. I mean, that's just primo, when you can give your husband a son. In that culture, if you are unable to give your husband a son, then you can actually be divorced. If all you bear is girls, he can divorce you. If you cannot bear children, he can divorce you. Bearing him a son. Just consider the greatest. We're talking with Major Haddad in Lebanon, who had four beautiful daughters. Beautiful young girls. He was expecting his fifth child. He said, "Pray that God will give me a son." He was about to lose the respect of his army because he had all girls. And so when the fifth child was born, it was a girl. He was so disappointed. It's still that way in that culture today. Having a boy is so much. In that culture, when a girl goes into labor, everybody would come over. They'd bring the goodies, the band. When the midwife came out and said, "It's a boy," they'd strike up the band, they'd have their dances, they'd drink and have a big party. If the midwife came out and said, "It's a girl," they'd fold up everything and go home. Leah was able to bear four sons in rapid succession. That should put her at the top of the pile. She was hoping that it would. "Now surely my husband will be attached to me." And so every time she called Levi, "Come here, attached." Hoping that Jacob would catch on and become attached to her. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. And so the problem between these sisters of envy, jealousy. And she said to Jacob, she became sort of witchy, she said, "Give me children or else I will die." The envy didn't really bring her much comfort from Jacob. Her attitude caused his anger to rise against her. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" You mean, you know, it's not me, woman. It's obvious that I am able to produce children. Basically, that's what he was declaring. So she said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." And then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as a wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, "God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore she called his name Judged, Dan, which means judged. God has judged my case, or judgment. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." So she called his name Wrestlings, Naphtali, which means wrestling. And so interesting how that the children were named after hopes, aspirations, or after circumstances of their birth. Now Leah saw that she had stopped bearing. And look at the competition. You don't read of Jacob complaining, though, interestingly enough. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Troop. And probably that's what she was hoping, that you know, she would have a troop of children. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Happy, Asher. Sounds like the seven dwarfs in a way, doesn't it? Happy, higher, dwelling, troop, wrestlings, judgment, praises. Doc. Grumpy. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest, and at this time Reuben was probably 7-8 years old. And he went in the days of the wheat harvest, and he found some mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? So there's there's a lot of bitterness between the sisters. It's sad, it's tragic, it no doubt was not a happy, peaceful home. And I don't know how you could have in these kind of circumstances. Mandrakes were thought to be an aphrodisiac, and they were considered to be sort of a fertility kind of a drug within them, especially within the roots of the mandrakes. And it is possible that Rachel was hoping to take the mandrakes as an aphrodisiac and perhaps create fertility, for they were thought to be a fertility drug. And so when Reuben found the mandrakes in the field, brought them home to his mother, Rachel said, oh, I'd like to have those mandrakes. And Leah retorted, hey, isn't it enough that you've taken away the husband? Now you want my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said to her, I'll let you lie with him tonight for your son's mandrakes. And so when Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, hey, you got to come into my tent tonight. I've hired you with my son's mandrakes. And so he spent the night in her tent. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore a son, a fifth son. And she said, God has given me my hire because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Hired, Ishkar. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So she called his name Dwelling, hoping that her husband would now dwell in her tent because she was able to produce so many children. Still, the sadness persists. After that, she bore a daughter, puts her out of the ball game, called her name Dinah. And imagine what it must have been for that little girl with all these brothers now, some 10 brothers. And so she, no doubt, had a pretty good life. The brothers loved her very much, very jealous for her, as we'll find later in the story. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And so in hope and in faith, she called his name Adding. God will add another son. And indeed, she did have one more son after they had returned to the land of Israel and were in the area near Bethlehem. Her second son was born, the 12th son to Jacob. And in the childbirth, Rachel died. And so as the child was being born and she was having such a difficult time in delivery, she called his name Benoni, the son of misery. But Jacob changed his name to Benjamin, the son of my right hand. So it is true, God did add to her one more son. So she named him adding in hopes and faith that God would add one more son. Now it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob came to Laban and he said, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country." So now he has 11 sons and he wants to go back home. The two wives and their two maids. And he's asking Laban to send him away. "Give me my wives, my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you." So I've fulfilled my obligation. I've put in the 14 years. Laban said to him, "Please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." The word translated experience there is the Hebrew word for enchantments. And it is possible that he is saying, "I have learned by enchantments that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." He was involved in the worship of false gods. He had perhaps gone in to one who was a diviner in divination or enchantments to try to learn the reasons for his success. And he learned by it that Jacob was the reason for God's blessings. "That the Lord has blessed me for your sake." Then he said, "Name me your wages and I will give it." Now earlier he had said that and he got a good deal. "You know, I'll serve you 7 years for your daughter Rachel, your younger daughter." And I'm sure that that was far more than what Laban was expecting. And so knowing that Jacob is sort of a soft touch in the fact of naming his own wages, he again says, "Name your wages, you know. Stick around. I've found that I've been blessed because you're here. And so name your wages." And I'm sure that he could hardly believe his ear when Jacob named his wages. He said to him, "You know how I served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and now it's increased to a great amount." So Jacob is reminding him, "Hey, you didn't have much when I came, and now you've got a lot. The Lord has blessed you since my coming, and now when shall I also provide for my own house?" You're a wealthy man now, but I don't have anything for myself, for my own labors. So he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all of the speckled and spotted sheep, and all of the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in the time to come. When the subject of my wages comes before you, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it's with me." Laban said, "Oh, that it were according to your word." All right, that sounds like a good deal. What he was saying is this: you go through the flocks now and you remove all of the speckled and spotted among the flocks and all of the brown lambs. And the solid colors, they become yours. You take out now the speckled and spotted, so that there is no chance for them to breed with the solid colors. I'll take then just the solid colors. And whatever are born from these solid colored animals, they become my wages. The speckled and the spotted ones born from the solid colored animals. So Laban took all of the speckled and spotted ones out and he gave them to his sons and he said, now stay at least 3 days' journey away from Jacob. Don't let the flocks intermingle. He thought, man, I've got it made, you know. He's going to remove all the spotted and speckled. There will be no interbreeding. All he gets then is the spotted and speckled ones born now from these solid colors. And he really thought that he had a deal. That Jacob's got to be a fool, you know. And man, I've got this guy. And he really figured that he had it made. So he ordered his sons, now you always stay at least 3 days away, 3 days' journey away from his flock. Keep those spotted and speckled ones away so they can't interbreed with those solid colored ones. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted and all of the female goats that were speckled and spotted and every one that had some white in it and all of the brown ones from among the lambs, and he gave them into the hands of his sons. And then to make sure, he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and almond and chestnut trees. And he peeled white strips in them and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. Then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked, and all of the brown of the flock of Laban, but he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous, and he had large flocks, female and male servants, camels and donkeys. I mean, he really began to be wealthy and prosperous as he was very skilled in the art of husbandry. Now, there are those who would criticize the account at this point because they say that Jacob believed in prenatal marking. That by putting these striped rods, that he was able, he thought that he could then, in this prenatal suggestion, create the striped and the speckled offspring. It could be that that is what Jacob did think. I wouldn't put it past him. However, you must realize that this fellow has about 80 years of experience at least in husbandry, in the observation of the processes of conception and all among the animals and the development of a species. He probably knew by experimentation and by observation what has come to be known as the Mendelian law concerning the dominant and recessive genes. And knowing that even in the solid colored animals there could be the recessive spots and stripes. The King James translates the word yacham as conceived. But the word yacham, ham means hot, and so yacham means to be hot. And it is more likely understanding a little bit about animal reproduction, he knew that as the animals came in for the watering, when the striped, white striped branches were placed in front of them, that somehow it created them, or it caused them to come into heat and thus to reproduce. And rather than trying to prenatal suggestion mark the animals, it was probably the process to take, when the stronger ones would come in, he would want them to reproduce because the chances then of developing a stronger flock for himself, he would then bring them into heat with the striped rods. And it was the Lord, really, who gave him the strong spotted and speckled ones, because later on Jacob himself acknowledged that it was God who had prospered and blessed him. As he was returning, he said, "Lord, I am not worthy the least of thy mercies that you have shown unto me. When I passed over this river going, running away, I had only my rod in my hand." That's the only possession I have, was just my walking stick. And now I'm coming back and look, I've got so many sheep and oxen and camels and all that I have to separate them into two companies in order to travel. And he was overwhelmed with the grace of God and the mercies of God towards him. And he acknowledged that it was God who had granted him the success and the wealth and not his own devices. And so where some would see him in this position as scheming and trying to put one over by, you know, creating a prenatal suggestion and thus marking the animals by their looking at the stripes as they were in conceiving, if you would read the word conceive to be brought into heat, you probably would get, at least from the Hebrew, a more accurate understanding of what the passage is saying. And reading it in the Hebrew, there is not so much a suggestion as trying to mark them from this prenatal kind of sight of the what you see and so forth is what you get. But it is more of a thing of creating a heat so that they would conceive and thus bringing more rapid reproduction among the stronger of the animals that he might have the stronger herd. And just letting the weak ones go at their own pace, and then Laban ends up with all of the weak ones and Jacob ends up with the stronger of the flock. So we come to chapter 30, and interesting chapter. The next couple chapters are, you're going to find, very fascinating as Jacob finally decides that it's time to leave. And chapters 31 and 32 is what we're coming to, and fascinating chapters. So read them this week, next Sunday night. We continue our study, and what fascinating parts we come into next week. Tonight was a heavy. I mean, what can you say about wives that are competing with each other, for kids, and a guy who is pretty shrewd in his husbandry. But next week we get into some real great stuff to deal with. May the Lord bless you now, keep you in his love, fill you with his spirit, guide you with his wisdom, anoint you with his love, that you might share with others the glorious news of God's love and grace towards man through Jesus Christ, his Son.